Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, gang. Today's guest is Keith Buckley, lead vocalist for the New England metal band Many Eyes. Together, we take a deep dive into the writing, recording, and inspiration behind their debut breakout single, Revelation. In addition to Keith, Many Eyes features brothers Nick and Charlie Belmore, who play drums and guitars respectively. They also write, produce, and record all the music. And that's the template that Keith is given to go off of. He gets handed this massive track of music, and it is then his turn to put lyrics to paper and add those words to the song. I asked Keith if he wrote these lyrics specifically for this song, and the answer was a resounding yes. This is his revelation, his coming to grips with many things about his past, and truly looking forward for things to come. Keith wears his heart on his sleeve and leaves no stone unturned, as he bears his soul about the song's lyrics and meaning. So for all this and a whole lot more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Keith, you're back in the hot seat. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. And where are you today?
I'm in Grand Island, New York, which is across the bridge out of Buffalo between the city and Niagara Falls. So it's an oft-overlooked island on the Niagara River.
You're freezing cold.
I'm freezing cold, but I am on island time now officially. So I can pretend I'm tropical, but it's 50-mile-an-hour winds and it's snowing.
Right on. Well, we're here today to talk about your new band, Many Eyes, and the song Revelation. Mm-hmm. You were here about a year ago, December 5th, 2022. We had you on to discuss Planet Shit from Every Time I Die. But this is your new band, and let's talk about it a little bit. From what I understand, Jamie Josta from Hatebreed had introduced you to your two new bandmates, brothers Nick and Charlie Belmore. And I'm sitting here going, how do I know those names? And I dug a little bit. And of course, they played on the most recent Dee Snider record, For the Love of Metal, that Jamie produced. And they were in Kingdom of Sorrow with Kirk Winstein from Crowbar. So tell me how this kind of all happened.
It was very, very serendipitous. I was just kind of taking some time off for what I thought would be an extended hiatus from music for a little bit. I just kind of wanted to focus on my sobriety and fatherhood and things like that, and things that I had never really given a fair shake during my extensive touring for 20 plus years. So I was kind of just enjoying some time at home in Buffalo, and I got wind that Jamie on Jamie's podcast was talking to a gentleman named Scott Vogel, who sings for Terror. But Scott Vogel grew up in Buffalo, and I grew up along with him going to see his band shows, Despair, Buried Alive, things like that. He had been in all these hardcore bands, these local bands. So he was a legend in my eyes. And it was strange because the two of them started talking about what I was going to do next for some reason, and it just so happened that I heard it. And when you get two people like that discussing you, it's very humbling. And I took it very seriously. And I was like, well, if they're considering what I should do next, maybe I should consider what I'm going to do next. So by the end of the conversation, I guess Jamie had sort of been motivated enough to actually reach out and say, hey, I got these guys that I want you to meet, Nick and Charlie. They played Kingdom of Sorrow and played with Dee Snider. And I was like, already, I was like, this is not the way I want to go with my next band. Like, I don't want guys. I know it would be very cool to play with guys that are in Kingdom of Sorrow, but it's just too heavy for me at this point. Like, I'm really mellowing out. My whole attitude is changing,
So wait a second. Real quick. So Revelation is you mellowing out? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's me mellowing out. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it as a favor, because I trust Jamie implicitly. I mean, he has Josta Pasta, obviously, if he can market his own pasta line, you got to believe that this guy knows what he's doing.
I don't have my own pasta line.
So, no, I don't either. I wish I did. So I was like, okay, I'll go down and I'll see what this is about. And I made the drive down to Connecticut and I met these guys, and you know, they are very, Charlie's a big dude, very intimidating. And Nick is very, intense. He's very intense. He's a producer, half. So he was very meticulous and technical, but we started talking about everything and it was kind of like, hey, do you guys like really want to play this kind of music? Or like, what are you actually into? And they're like, oh, we actually really like grunge and alternative rock. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what I really like as well. You know? So it was just kind of like, all right, now let's be honest with each other. Like, where do we want to do if we're going to do something, you know, like what kind of music are we going to write? So they were like, well, I don't know. Like I kind of wanted to do a band with like choruses. I'm like, me too. Like, let's be like kind of heavy, but have choruses. And you know, we just sort of tried to find these common grounds at first that weren't based on our perceptions of each other. You know, because they had a lot of misconceptions about me and what they thought I'd be into. Yeah. So at first they were kind of just telling me what they thought I'd want to hear and vice versa. And once we finally cracked the egg open, then it was like, okay, so we're all guys like in our 40s. We all grew up loving Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. You know, that was our shit as far as like mainstream music is concerned. And then once we got into like alternative or once we got into like hardcore stuff, it was, you know, it was like the more straightforward stuff. Like he was familiar with a lot of the Buffalo bands. So we had that in common as well. And stuff like Despair, stuff like Buried Alive, stuff like Snapcase, you know, we love Snapcase too. So
yeah,
that was just really, really refreshing, was to talk about stuff like that and to admit that those are our influences, because those things hadn't really shown, you know, so far in our careers. So yeah, we just kind of went forward based on that. And, you know, I mean, I, like you said, it doesn't really sound like that in Revelation, but I think Revelation was a lot of pent up stuff that we had working on, you know, and it was sort of like the exhaust fumes of what we were coming off of kind of morphing into something new, because it was still this heavy anger. But, you know, I knew that if I was going to come out with something after Every Time I Die, it couldn't be a total 180. You know, people would hate it because they would just disregard it as like me trying to change an image or something. And that's not what I've ever worried about. There hasn't been an image. I just try to maintain consistency and be honest to, you know, who I am and what I'm doing.
Yeah. But aren't you damned if you do, damned if you don't? If it yeah. sounds like what you sound like, it's like, oh, he's rehashing the same ideas. Yep. And if you go a little left to center, it's like, oh, he changed.
Exactly.
Or, you know,
exactly.
So how do you navigate that, but go from the heart, right?
Yeah, that was a big question. And I think that I was lucky enough to be in a position where I had so much other stuff in my life at that point that I couldn't overthink this one specific thing. You know, I mean, I was fighting a custody battle for my child. I was going through the band breakup stuff that was still in litigation. I mean, I was going through all this stuff that I really didn't feel like I can focus. But what I had was a lot of confusion and anger in me, you know, so that when I did sit down to write, that's what came out. And I was like, this is what it is, because this is what it is right now. Like, this is the present moment for me. This is not me trying to work out a formula as to what most people are going to like versus what they're not going to like. I'm not field testing anything. This isn't something where I go out and get some ideas from other people and put them all together. This is what we're making now. And I have to believe there's a reason for it. So I just sort of went with the anger that I was feeling and the confusion that I was feeling. And I knew that that would appeal to the Every Time I Die fans. But I also knew that it wasn't too far left of center, as you said, because The Damn Things was pretty melodic, you know, and people were used to me being the Damn Things and singing a little bit more. So when the chorus, you know, the chorus was like, well, we could either do this big vaulted like singing chorus, or it could just be another mosh part. You know, I was like, no, let's just actually just go for a chorus and see what happens. So a lot of just seeing what happens.
And now with this project, I know in Every Time I Die, you would just get this music, you had told
yeah.
me, and you would write these lyrics. And I was amazed. I told you, how do you write over this stuff? It's breakneck changes
yeah.
and time changes. And it's like, as a lyricist, as vocalist, I wouldn't even know where to begin. How's this project the same, or does it differ? Do they bring the ideas in, Nick and Charlie, and you
yeah.
Write the lyrics over it?
Yeah, the ideas come in, and you know, I feel like it's just a little more spaced out. It's not as breakneck, as you said. It doesn't change as fast. I don't have to keep rewinding to hear a pattern that I'm looking for. You know what I mean? I'm not counting beats or anything. I'm just kind of really vibing it out and just seeing like what it feels like, and then seeing if vocals can float over the top of it. And that is such a relief. You know, that's just, it just, that just works better for me, because, you know, I don't, I never liked being isolated and writing lyrics. I hated it. But if I were to say, hey guys, I need you all in the room while I write lyrics, they'd have to be there for 20 hours playing the same thing over and over again until I could recognize the pattern and then have lyrics that, that fit to it. So I was just like, I'm just not going to inconvenience anybody. Just record it, give it to me. I'll go and listen to it on my own for those 20 hours, you know, while I write to it. But this way, when we were in the studio together, and then Charlie eventually came up to Buffalo, and we wrote together in the same room, it was just like, just kind of playing a part over and over, and us just kind of humming and singing along and seeing what worked. And eventually it'd be just something would click. And we both know that it clicked because we both had these sensibilities that came from the same source. You know what I mean? We both liked the same sort of thing. So if it triggered this like sense of nostalgia plus this excitement of what it could be next, you know, then we knew that that was the direction to go in.
Yeah, and that's great, because when you're working with the same people, and it's not a bad thing, you've been in a band for all these years, but you finish each other's sentences. Mm-hmm. It's like any other relationship. You spend that kind of close quarters. When you're working with new people, you know, if you get that little bit of inspiration that you're talking about, it goes a long way, because now you're feeding off ideas that you've never been fed before, because it's a different human being. It's someone from a different band.
Exactly.
So they're not gonna say, you know, you already know your old guitar player or whoever is gonna, they're gonna go to this chord. That's their move.
Right.
But when you're working with new people, and that will inspire you a lot of times.
Yeah, it really does. It not only sort of tunes you into a new channel that other people are on, but it kind of like puts you in touch with a part of yourself that you were unfamiliar with for a very long time. Of like, oh, I didn't know I still loved that stuff, you know, because there are things that were coming out that were like, oh, this reminds me of like, I don't know, like a Pavement song. Oh my gosh, I forgot I loved Pavement. Or, you know, this reminds me of like a Space Hog song, you know, just something that's like, I forgot that I loved that stuff. And so to be able to get in touch with it again and to expound on it really made for an amazing experience. And that's why this, you know, this is filled with such a different energy for me.
Well, if I had to use three words to describe the new song, I would just say angry but inspired.
Yeah, thank you.
You can tell you're on fire here, and yeah. I want to get into the song in a second. I have to ask you before we do that, you know, is there any, I'm trying to word this correctly, is there any fear? It's like, look what you built with Every Time I Die, and now it's mm-hmm. like, okay, because I know how hard it is to get back in the van, get the phone, you know, start calling people. Hey man, I got this new band. You kind of got to prove yourself.
Yes. Yeah. There's always a fear, just based on the old patterns that I'd been through and sort of the old experiences that really, you know, traumatized me in a way, either insignificantly or very significantly. But there's been so much other stuff in my life that fear is, has sort of been replaced with, just like and not necessarily excitement, just like a peace. I'm like at peace with it. I know I'm going to have to do it, you know, and I've made peace with it, and I don't fear it because, one, I'm sober now and have been for 3 years, and that everything's just changed.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. All my relationships have changed. The ones that, you know, I still have, they've changed, and I don't feel like people think that I'm trying to get something out of them for free. I don't, you know, when you drink and you're around drunks, it's just a lot of manipulation going on. And you don't know if they're manipulating you, and you don't know if you're manipulating them because you assume they're manipulating you. And it's all the second guessing and ulterior motives and things like this. But I just feel like now everything is just so honest with myself and the people that I have to, that I reach out to. You know, we're our booking agent, Dave Shapiro and Tim Borer, I've always admired them, you know, and I've seen the work that they've done with other bands, but I've just never really felt good enough for them. You know what I mean? And it was always just, it was a strange feeling. I've seen the work they did, and they were just so professional. And I was like, oh, my band is just, we're just drunk punk rock kids that have, you know, kind of been doing this for a long time. We're not professionals. We've just been around as long as other professionals have been. But now it's like, okay, no, this is a game of adults. You know, this is like people that are really trying to help each other and respect each other and push each other forward, not for this, not for selfish gains, but just because they want to help. you know? And I know that now, and I see that now, and I'm not like, ooh, why do you want to help me? What do you want out of me? It's not like that anymore. It's like, no, I feel that you really like me, and you know, you respect me, and you see what I'm doing. So I will allow you to help, and I'll surrender to the fact that I need help from you, you know? And it's awesome.
Well, that's also a great feeling. I mean, of course you did the Damned Things, and you've done other projects over the years, but you know, you were mostly known for Every Time I Die. And same for me. I'm mostly known for my band. And when I ventured out to start calling people to be on my podcast, I had never really done anything outside of the band. I was amazed that, you know, who knew the guy from Less Than Jake can get a phone call back.
Sounds like
that's what's happening with you. Like, you know, you got these booking agents, people that want to work with you, and you're like, oh, I am something outside of my band. That's a good feeling.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that is a very good feeling. And I think that I was searching for that for so long. And, you know, it's like I look back at the person that I was, and I feel a little sorry for him, because I can see how hard he was working at trying to prove that he was something outside of his band. You know, I was writing books. I was constantly, you know, having meetings with like Comedy Central to write scripts for a TV show or, you know, movie and things like that. And just nothing was working out. Nothing was working out. And it just, it never stopped me from chasing it. It never stopped me from working at it. And I just feel like I just wasn't in the right place in my life at that point. I was just, you know, I was an addict. I had a lot of stuff that I needed to work through. And had it worked out, it just would have been a catastrophic failure on the next level. You know what I mean? I would have gone to the next level and failed even bigger, and it would have been more destructive, because I wasn't going into it with the tools that I needed to survive it, you know? But now, give me those chances now, and it'll be a totally different story.
Well, with that said, let's get into this bad boy and peel behind the layers of these lyrics here and see what's going on. Four minutes and 14 seconds, revelation. We got an 8-bar intro with a 2-additional-bar setup, I'm calling it. We'll talk about that in a second, before verse one. Stereo guitars, are these tuned to C sharp?
Yes.
I know they're low.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, it's menacing.
Yeah.
I got stereo guitars, bass guitar, and drums just crushing you the whole first half. We get a pick slide running underneath all of this chaos. There's this pick slide going. And it comes back near the second half. On bars 4 and 8, the stereo guitars go to a little riff run. On bar 9, it almost sounds like a synth or a guitar pedal going haywire or guitar octaves. What is that there?
That's his pedals. Yeah, he's a wizard with pedals. Yeah, he's got some pedals that they just straight up sound like synth stabs all the time, and it's just awesome.
Are you running synths anywhere in this song?
No.
Okay, well then I'll stop saying the word synth, because it's written everywhere.
No, that's the sound of it. Yeah, no, we love that sound. We're just using a pedal to make the sound.
No, it is absolutely killer. I love it. If the devil ever had me, he don't have me no more. I got my heel on the head of his whore, and my constant sorrow ends with a revelation. What you are to become, you have always been. So where are all the holy men? I see some cowards. I see some frauds. I see my diamond in the teeth of the dogs.
You know, believe it or not, I like to work in metaphors. So I at the time, I had been reading the Bible when I got sober. That was one of the first things I started to do. And it was a venture of like less religious and more of just like, I consider myself an author. I love to read, but I've never read the greatest story ever told. So I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it, because it felt like I was in jail, to be honest. I was holed up in my apartment. I couldn't go out, really. I didn't have any friends left in Buffalo. The ones I thought I had, not my friends anymore. I didn't have a support system except for my wife and my daughter who were in my apartment with me. So I was like, well, when people are in jail, they read the Bible and it gets them through. So I'm going to do that. So I was working with a lot of biblical imagery. And I feel like that line was really good for me because I think that it takes me out of my past into the present with like, if I was a sinner before, I'm not now, you know, sort of thing. That's like, I finally got a hold of this evil that had been attacking me, which was my alcoholism, you know, and having his heel on the head of a whore is, that's apocalyptic. That's from Revelation where, you know, that will be how evil is eventually conquered, with good getting the foot on the head of evil. And yeah, the idea that it was just a lot of suffering under that evil that I really couldn't identify for a very long time, that now that I had kind of reversed the role of it and kind of regained my power over it, I saw things in a new direction, or in a new way, and I saw things heading in a new direction. And it was the idea that, like, okay, well, if I'm sober now, then maybe I've always been a sober kid trapped in the body of an alcoholic, you know? And it's not that I've so much morphed into something new, it's that I've just come out as myself, you know, that because I always have wrestled with the idea of guilt and sin. And I mean, you read any of the old lyrics and it's just a constant struggle with God of like, what am I doing wrong? You know, like what is this all about? So yeah, it wasn't so much that I'd become something new. It was that I'd become what I always was. And to do that, I expected to look around and find other people that were very supportive of me and be like, okay, well, I see you now. And you know, like, thank God that you're clean. Thank God that you're sober, because this is who I miss. This is who I used to be friends with. This is who I used to be, you know, who I used to confide in. And I lost that person, but now you're back. And I didn't get any of that. I got more of like, who do you think you are?
Oh.
So I was like, whoa, where are all the good people? Where are all the good people that are supposed to be my friends and my support system? Because they're definitely not there. So that was the revelation to me. It was that, you know, when you become yourself, you're not going to find many other people that are supporting you, unfortunately.
Do you remember if you wrote this all in one sitting? Was this just something that ran from brain to pen to paper, or was this a work in progress?
No, this was brain to pen to paper. This was all, I remember where I was when I did it. And yeah, this all just kind of came out. And then it was just a shuffling around of lines to match the patterns. But yeah.
I was going to say, had you heard the music at this point when you wrote
it? Yeah, I had the music. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That sometimes will inspire you. Just the nature of the track itself.
Absolutely. Especially because we had talked about like writing, you know, some slower, more palatable stuff. And then to get this first, it was surprising, but I liked it. It was a good surprise because I was like, oh, this is jolting. Like, okay. I'm sure we'll get to the other stuff eventually, but for now, this, like I said, it matches the mood that I'm in now, and it matches the conditions that I'm in now, going through all these different things in my life and not having anyone around me to support me. You know, that was an angry feeling that I didn't deal with, you know, until much later, but this was therapeutic.
I think as your first step forward as a setup single, this song is perfect, because it really isn't until we get to the chorus. I was like, whoa, mm-hmm. You know, and even then, like you said, Damn Things have had some melodic stuff. And
yeah,
but you know, up to this point, it sounds like Keith Buckley.
Yeah.
It sounds like something you would do. This verse one, great stuff in here. For the first half, the stereo guitars are playing a trilling pattern with the bass and the drums. It's super driving, but it's breakneck and it's syncopated. This whole first part, it's like, wow, you know, it reminds me of where you came from. Sounds like your vocals are doubled.
Yeah, they might be a little bit on certain parts, but not for the most part.
Okay. They just sound incredible. Nice. After the line, with a revelation, I wrote high synth panned off to the left, but yeah. I now know that's just another guitar, one of those guitar pedals.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool effect. The back half of this verse, the drums switch to a more straightforward beat. So already by this point in the song, we've already had five or six different rhythmic changes coming at you. The stereo guitars are playing those trills again with some really cool pull-offs. And on Teeth of the Dogs, at that last line, it is repeated with a cool delay on that before we go into pre-chorus number one, which the lyric here is just, you ain't cool around here, said three times. And that's kind of what you were getting at.
Yeah, that was just kind of like I said, like taking ownership of the fact that, okay, I'm here now. And if you're not going to be with me, you know, if you're not going to gather with me, then you're going to scatter. Like it's one thing or the other. You're not, this is going to be my place then. And this is where I belong. And this is where I feel comfortable. And if I'm the only one that's here, then that's okay. Because it's, I've been where you've been, and I hated myself when I was there. So now you're not going to make me feel like the outcast, because I won't go back to this, you know, dysfunctional way of life. Now it's me that's going to take ownership of the place where I'm standing. You ain't cool around here. You ain't cool around here.
You ain't cool around here. Well, I wrote here in pre-chorus one, musically, like the intro, going into verse one, there was that kind of fake out that I talked about there. It's on bar nine at the intro. There's like that, I was calling it a synth, but there's like this 1.5 bars and then the verse starts. It's very different. The same thing happens here. There's a holdout. It's like one bar of music before the vocals start in the pre-chorus. And there's, again, I wrote almost a high, high-pitched sounding guitar or keyboards wailing here. In the background, it's such an eerie effect, and it doesn't overtake the heaviness of the band,
right?
You know, but if it wasn't there, it wouldn't be the same track,
right? He's good with that. I mean, he's really nice with that stuff, and I love the way that he utilizes it, because it is just, he only puts it where it's necessary, and you know, it's one of those things where you don't even know that it's missing until you hear it there. And you're like, yeah, that was missing.
This part in particular, it almost sounds like synth bells, like ding ding, like it's triumphant, but you gotta really listen for it. But it's interesting where it sits in the mix. It almost makes me feel like it makes the stereo guitars and everything bigger, if that makes sense. That this is happening, and you'd think it would act as the opposite. It'd be like, what's this distraction taking away from this big band? But it doesn't do it there. Again, like I said, pre-chorus one, the feel changes again. So we're already in like our seventh feel before we drop into chorus one, and surprise, the feel changes yet again.
Yep.
The drums, the bass, the stereo guitars, and those crazy pedals are now running a halftime groove. The synth I have here, those guitar pedals, it's like in-tune noise interference that I wrote. It doesn't distract you. It's it works with the music. I wrote again, it's a great layer. And here we get our first harmonies in the song. You go back and forth here with some aggressive screaming, which is great. Look me in the eyes again. Look me in the eyes. I tell you. I tell you. I know what I have seen. You're not saying what you mean. It's not true. It's not true. Look me in the eyes again. Look me in the eyes. I dare you. And the response vocal is, I dare you. I dare you, which is screamed. And then, I know what I have seen. Harmony on that line. You're not saying what you mean. It's not true. We get the response of, it's not true. And then we get a screamed, it's not true, that leads us right into verse two. What's happening here?
That was all Nick. Nick was the one who, when I had written the chorus, there were no like interchanging screams. I think I just sang the front half and screamed the back half, but then he pieced it together. So it's kind of a call and response, and it just made it so much bigger. I loved it when I heard it. That's just kind of the idea that, you know, after all of this, I don't know, all of this confusion, I keep using that word, but it's really the only word I can use. All this confusion, there was so much coming from all directions, you know, like online, and, no one was speaking to me, and I just heard all these different things from different sources, and trying to track the sources and trying to make amends and trying to understand what was going on, and nobody would talk to me face to face. And I realized that, you know, there's so much that has to be said if you're going to combat some sort of bad energy, that it needs to be personal. It needs to be not confrontational, but it at least needs to be personal. And there needs to be an eye contact there that, you know, you can't get if you're texting or emailing. And, you know, some of these people that I was ending relationships with, I had had for 30 years, some I had for 20 years, some I had for 10 years, some I had for 40 years. And no one is everyone's just emailing me or texting me from, you know, at the same time about different things. And I was like, I just need to talk to somebody, like, please just talk to me, you know. And nobody would. So it was one of those things where I was just like so outraged that I just needed to have some human connection with someone, because there's a truth to be told there. And if people think that I'm lying about something, you could see it from the way that I speak, that I'm a truth teller. I don't lie to people. So that was just sort of the idea that my truth is strong enough, and I believe in it enough to tell it to anybody who is willing to listen to me.
Sounds to me like you were going a little crazy. I mean, you look complete. Your demeanor is completely different than a year ago. And heck, it was more than a year ago that I talked to you, because I sometimes record a month or two in advance. So, I mean, your whole being, and I think it sounds to me like a lot of this was therapeutic to get this stuff on paper. Yeah. You got a new band. And is this band, was it kind of like your light, your beacon of hope for a little bit?
It was definitely something that I could focus on that was positive for a while, because I just didn't have any positive. I had no reinforcement. I didn't have any mile markers with which to say like I was making any progress, you know, how courts are, you know, how lawyers are, things like that. And I had them coming at me from all sides. So this was definitely a very positive thing. And to get out of Buffalo and to go to Connecticut and work with some new people, it took me going there for the, my new managers to say like, we love you, but we're very worried about you. Like, you're going to need some help. So, I went to, I ended up going to a treatment facility in Salt Lake City for a month, where it wasn't because I had relapsed or anything. I just was having a really hard time being sober and being underneath the weight of all of this. You know, it was really affecting my emotions and things like that. So yeah, this band got me to the people that actually expressed concern and love for me, you know, and my wife got me the help that I needed. And it was, it changed everything for me.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Keith Buckley coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18+. One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods. And now, back to the show.
Well, right out of chorus one, we go into verse two. Same overall instrumentation as verse one. There's some stuff in the back half we'll talk about in a second.
I have discovered a grace. I am a patient, peaceful man, but make no mistake. I am the weapon in a righteous hand. I did not come to suffer, but I have mastered the art. So I keep a bullet.
I have discovered a grace. I am a patient, peaceful man. But make no mistake, I am the weapon in a righteous hand. I did not come to suffer, but I have mastered the art. I love that line.
Thank you.
So I keep a bullet in the back of my heart. I heard the rattle. I knew the snake. I stuck the landing on a leap of faith.
This was more positive projection than it was anything else. I hadn't yet been a man who was patient. My patience was waning, but I knew that my higher self that I was trying to become once I had kicked alcoholism and the other addictions that I had, that, you know, I could see the kind of person that I was going to be. And as far as being a father is concerned, it was being a very patient father and watching my daughter grow up, you know, without any rush like I used to have of like, oh, I'm going on tour. You got to hurry up and hit these mile markers, because if I'm not here to see them, then I'm a failure as a father, you know? But I did, like I said, with this band, the grace that I had gotten from it and the allowance to have a therapeutic way to write these lyrics, you know, that was a discovery for me. I never saw it coming. So I was very thankful for it. And just because I was working towards peace, and, you know, that's kind of the reason I just stayed quiet the whole time, is because I couldn't let that anger manifest in any way. I was just being quiet and being peaceful the whole time, because I knew that in the long run, that would be the smartest thing to do, you know, just to stay quiet, keep the peace, let everyone else talk. It's okay. Just be calm and chill. But that doesn't mean that, you know, someone who does that, that they're not a pushover, you know, that they still can believe in righteousness and know what truth is and that it's worth defending. And it got to the point where the only things that were angering me were the things that were aimed at my family, my daughter, my wife, you know. So like, there's a righteous anger built in to protect my family, but it's not protecting my ego anymore. You know, I don't care about that. I'm patient and I'm peaceful otherwise. But when these attacks start coming towards my wife and my daughter, then I can be as deadly as a weapon, you know. And I figure that all the grief that I had endured, as far as like, I didn't come to suffer, but I mastered the art. I mean, I, you know, just through the years of being alive as an alcoholic, it was just a lot of suffering. And, you know, that idea that if you do something for 10,000 hours, you're a master of it. So, okay, I must have mastered suffering. I've been miserable for well over 10,000 hours. So I know that if you have a gentle heart, that it can be taken advantage of. So you always have to sort of have that reserve weapon that you only, you know, about.
You've heard the saying too, Keith, that, you know, be nice to strangers. You don't know what their struggle is.
Exactly.
I would never have known. I mean, how many Warped Tours we do together? I'd pass by you.
You'd have
a beer in your hand. We'd what's up? You were the happiest guy in the world. You had the world by the tail end, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
I was none the wiser.
That was the really awful thing about my alcoholism, was that it convinced me that it made me a better person. And not only convinced me that I was a better person, but I was able to feel like a better person. And I am just I'm a genuinely nice guy. I am that friendly. I might not have been always that outgoing had I been sober, but I never harbor, you know, any contempt for anybody, especially strangers that I don't know. Because, yeah, like you said, I don't know their struggle. So I always, you know, gave people the benefit of the doubt. But giving people the benefit of the doubt is, I gave the wrong people the benefit of the doubt, you know, and I put my trust and my energy into a lot of people that were completely undeserving of it. And I just didn't know how to discriminate, because the alcohol blurred it. The alcohol is like, you're the awful one, so everyone else is the good one. So treat them as such. Wow. You know? And that's kind of how I approached the world. And then I heard the rattle. I knew the snake, meaning like, that's kind of like what I was saying. Like, I should have known better, you know, like I trusted people that were rattling at me, you know, and I should have known that that's a bad sign. You know, they're showing me all the indications, they're red flagging constantly, constantly, constantly. And I'm like, oh, if they just need one more chance. They just need one more chance, you know? But I gave too many bad people too many chances. And so once I had kind of been backed into a corner by all of these rattling snakes, you know, I had nothing else to do but jump off the cliff. And it was a leap of faith of like, I don't know what that is, but I know what this is, and this is not good, you know? So to say that I stuck the landing on it just means like, oh, the leap of faith paid off, because here I am now and I'm in such a better place, you know, that I'm just looking forward finally, which is a beautiful thing.
That's awesome. Well, about halfway through, we get that high guitar pedal in tune interference that's running back here. Seems louder here in the mix in verse two. The back half of the verse, again, we go to that more straightforward drum beat feel like verse one. Then we're right into pre-chorus two. Same lyrics again. You ain't cool round here three times. Same overall instrumentation as pre-chorus one, But that pedal noise, that high-pitched part that's running underneath, it seems louder here, and I like how it builds the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Again, it's not loud to where it's distracting, but it is right. Noticeably louder than it was earlier in the song. Were you there for the mixing of this?
No, I was there only when he was mixing some of the vocals, just so I could sort of, you know, say yes or no to a lot of the stuff that he was suggesting. But no, none of those little things, those are all producer tricks that I kind of like. I don't know if I want to see behind the curtain. I love when I hear something back, like, whoa, where did that come from?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right. Would you be one if you got the mixes back and that noise was just too loud or something? Would you feel the, or are you kind of the mindset of like, no, we're creating art together and they're doing their thing?
Yeah. I let them do their thing. I'm very aware of their autonomy as musicians and human beings, and they wouldn't do it if they didn't feel it was for the best, you know? So I have to take mm-hmm. that into consideration. Like, just because I might not like it, I'm not the producer, and he obviously loves it for a reason. So, you know, I trust that in him.
And that takes, I think, a little, maybe, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but pressure off you a little bit. It's like, I can work on the lyrics and work to my contribution to the best of, and not micromanage all this other stuff. Cause I do that in my band. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that like you can do with everything in your life, you know, like you can trust that certain things are happening for a reason if you trust who's doing them, you know? So if, right. you know, and it really frees you up to just be like, whoa, what do I do now with all of this time that I'm not micromanaging? It's a crazy feeling.
But I'm the alpha male lead singer.
Yeah, right.
I have to be in control, Keith, right? Yeah. Isn't that what we're taught?
Dude, I know. That is what we're taught, unfortunately. But it works the other way, I promise.
I will beat on my chest louder than you. I will show you. Chorus 2 comes right off the heels of pre-chorus 2. Same lyrics here. Was there talk of maybe changing a lyric out, or were you pretty confident this is what needed to be said every time?
I hate to sort of put myself in a box now, this early on, but I am now of the school of thought that certain things need to be repeated in order for them to really hit. And I used to feel the opposite way of like, if it only happens once, and it doesn't come back and the listener is not rewarded with it a second time, then they're going to appreciate that first time so much more. But I don't think that way anymore. I really feel like as a music listener, and just like I said, someone that grew up listening to like alternative rock and grunge, that like these repetitive things, you actually feel like you're a part of the song by the end of it, because you're like, oh, I've heard this part before. I know this part again. I could sing it now. I'm getting more familiar with the lyrics. It's a great feeling. And it's not this puzzle that I'm trying to piece together. Smashing Pumpkins changed the lyrics a lot. Stone Temple Pilots changed the lyrics a lot. And for that reason, I think they're probably two of my least favorite alternative bands from that era, because they were just fucking confusing me all the time. You know, I wanted something that I could just sing and remember and sing it over and over and over again. So I want to be the band now that has the memorable parts that keep coming back.
I think that's what surprised me the most about this song was, okay, it sounds like Keith, but there was a little bit of conformity in terms of parts. Like, hey, this is going to be the same as the last one. That's okay. You know, but I never really heard you do that before.
That's crazy you say that, because that was like the one thing that I was just like, until the last minute, I was like, should I write new lyrics? Like, I have some, I could use some, but no, like I'm sticking to my guns. I'm really going to just make this part memorable. But yeah, I feel that might be the toughest pill for some people to swallow.
You'll thank yourself when you're a random Tuesday night in Fort Collins, Colorado, and you look out and the third chorus, the kid's singing the right words.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to see that kid in the front row singing.
I win. Okay, great. chorus 2, all the harmonies are in the same spots, all of the call and response vocals. And then we get into the bridge. And this part, part is awesome. Really cool delayed vocals hang over this part from the chorus. I'm calling this the hardcore part.
Yeah, this is hardcore.
The guitar panned off left with this cool hi-hat syncopated feel for 8 bars. On bar 5, the guitar panned off right does a like dun-dun with the kick and the toms and the bass guitar. And then there's feedback panned off right that takes us right into the first lyric here. And man, what another killer groove. Fuck off, I'm in love. What don't you understand? Fuck off, I'm in love. I rebuilt this heart by hand. Fuck off, I'm in love. Fuck off, I'm in love. And then what I'm calling the back half, the rejected stone becomes the cornerstone. I am a flower in filth. I am a thorn in your bone.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to figure out like what's the easiest way to say the most about this new place in my life, because it does look so different. You know, anyone does an A to B comparison of like who I used to be to who I am now. The difference is that now I have love to give. You know, there's just so much more to me than there was before. And if anyone has truly felt that, then they would understand making sacrifices for that love and those people that they love, you know. And everything I do is for my daughter. I mean, there's no easy way around being a good father if I was still drinking. There was just none. So, you know, I don't, for anybody that doesn't get that, it seems like simple math to me. You know what I mean? It was like, what are you having a problem understanding here? I'm a dad. I'm improving my life. Like, if you don't agree with that, fuck you. You're not a dad, or you're not the father of my child. You know, I am. So I'm going to make these choices.
Without prying and trying to get too personal, I mean, who are you speaking to here? Like those beggars and hangers on, those buddies yes. that used to go to the bar with, they're not calling you anymore because they have nothing to gain from you.
Exactly. The night friends, I call them. Yeah. They're never around during the day when you need somebody, but at night when they want to party, yep, they're on your phone. Yeah. It's to them essentially. And anybody else that just really is looking for a way to also articulate what they're feeling. You know, I think that standing up for a love without ever feeling like you have to justify it to anybody that doesn't know you is just a human privilege. You know, I mean, we should be able to do that. We don't have to tell people why we love who we love. It's just, that's an experience that's true to us. So if you don't get that, then I feel sorry for you. You've never had it, you know?
Most casual listeners, or I could imagine, you know, an 85-year-old man, if they were to hear this part, like, that man is really angry. Yeah. And I mean, your performance here is just, I mean, it's cutthroat, but I'm hearing the love, though.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. This is a language that only us musicians speak.
Well, no, I'm hearing it in the lyric, but yeah. Like, it sounds damn angry, but you're kind of drawing a line in the sand.
Right. And I don't think that that's anything too different from what I did with Planet Shit. I mean, it was very much drawing a line in the sand of saying like, there's good and there's evil, and I'm on the side of good, and this is where I stand, and it's not my job or my responsibility to make you informed as to why I'm making these decisions. It's not my responsibility to give you the heart that you haven't found in yourself yet. Like, that's your shit. So you need to do that. I did my work. I rebuilt this by hand. It took a long time, but I don't have to explain to you any other, you know, any other piece of my life other than I'm just happier now where I am.
Well, halfway through here, when you repeat "Fuck Off, I'm in Love" through the bridge, the band continues on. The vocals here get tucked a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You're just screaming. It's in your face, and they get tucked, which makes the band sound bigger.
Yeah.
For those couple bars there.
Yeah.
It sounds ferocious when it already sounded ferocious. The vocals get tucked, like I said, gives the audio illusion that the band gets bigger. And now there's this deranged, I'm calling it horror movie synth, which we now know is not a synth, panned off right. It's kind of Mr. Bungle-ish.
Yes.
And do you know good what call. I'm talking
oh, yeah.
about?
Yeah. Yeah. Good call.
It is very strange for this song.
Yeah.
But again, it's not this part that's in the forefront. You really got to strain. I would dare say if you heard this song in a bar or, you know, you were driving down the road or something, you wouldn't hear these synths. It's
right.
that buried.
Right.
Not
right.
synths. Pedals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those things that, I mean, Charlie knows his instrument and he knows his sounds and he's not, you know, chasing the dragon, as it were, looking for the perfect tone. He just knows what he likes, and he's sort of mastered all of his gear, and he just knows what it takes because he's had to write for Dee Snider for so long, you know. And it's one of those things where it's like that sound is so different than this sound, but there are things that can, you know, he can cross the streams on a certain amount of technical instruments and things like that. There's a lot that could go from one into the other pretty flawlessly. And for him to just be able to identify that is, you know, sort of a testament to his knowledge of musical instruments.
Well, the back half of, I'm still considering this the bridge, Keith, but this back half here where it starts with the rejected stone
yeah.
and goes through till I am a thorn in your bone. The back half of this, it's the intro.
Yes.
That
yes,
comes
it is.
Back here.
Yes,
That is so killer that it was brought back here now with vocals.
Right.
Do you remember talking about that, or that was just the brothers putting this together?
I think that was just them putting it together. Yeah, that wasn't anything. But yeah, that's a beautiful thing. I loved it.
It's perfect because that groove, and to your point earlier, that's something that maybe, you know, with every time you just would have done once.
Right.
But I'm glad it was brought back because that's just such a great part.
Yes, yes.
Very, very cool. Well, at the end of this, I Am a Thorn in Your Bone, there's two bars of guitar and another with octaves alone to set up chorus three. Same overall instrumentation as chorus one and chorus two, same lyrics and same harmony placements, which I think I know the answer here. You said it earlier. Let's give them a real chorus.
Yeah, give them a real chorus that they can remember and sing. And it's fun to sing because you could just belt it out. And I knew that when Nick played me the chorus, you know, just the instrumental of it, when we were writing the song, I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. Like, this is awesome. And because we had this discussion of like, what were the best parts of all my other, like, what did I love most about all the other bands that I had done? And like, without even thinking, I just said, like, the groove, like, I just love groove in a song. And he's like, okay, well, he's like, keeping that in mind, you know, he's like, I think I got some stuff I could put together. So he came to rehearsal the next day with this instrumentation, like not all pieced together as it is, but with the chorus and the intro and things like that. And I was just like, this chorus is just amazing. And the verses, they had this, you know, this really cool groove to it. So I was like, this is just perfect. Like, but this is as much of it as I want. Like, no more, no less. Like, moving forward, this is just all it takes.
Was there any discussion of doing a double chorus at the end and calling it a day? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't think I would have been for it. I think it would have been too many.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Been too many. Okay.
Been too many.
Okay, because
yeah.
if there was a spot to double the chorus, you could have kind of wrote it out here, and that would have been the end of the tune.
Yeah.
However, folks, there's a twist.
You got to have
twist
a twist.
Is, the twist is that we go back to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck!
Fuck off, I'm in love. Fuck off, I'm in love. What don't you understand? Fuck off, I'm in love. Fuck off, I'm in love. I rebuilt this heart by hand. Fuck off. Fuck off. The end is crushing. You just said the word groove.
Yeah.
There's a killer groove here. Double bass drums come in here. There's other double bass in the song, but here it's like you're throwing everything in. And I'm calling it again, that Mr. Bungalish evil sounding synth is back. That's not a synth. That comes in halfway through. A really cool delay on the chorus vocals, especially on the fuck off, I'm in love. There's something really cool that explodes there that wasn't on the other part in the bridge.
Yeah.
Something I didn't mention, Keith, I like the harmonies in this chorus. This chorus could have got really syrupy and sing-songy.
Mm-hmm.
The harmonies are subtle. I think it's, you know, a lot of times when I hear a song with scream, you know, you'll have the one screamy singer and you'll have the real soft singer. It's like,
yes,
you know, after four or five of those songs, it kind of gets old. You didn't overdo it with this song.
That is exactly what I was looking out for, and I think we all were, is just trying to avoid that because, you know, it felt different when we said, like, we want really heavy stuff and we want really big choruses. You know, that's 10,000 different Warped Tour bands, you know, that, like, that's that just smash the two together.
Right.
But it really is how syrupy the harmonies get underneath the choruses. And I don't know, there's just something, it was just the way that it was done so subtly with Nick that we just felt like it was perfect. No needed to touch it anymore. You know, no, it was big enough. We didn't have to keep adding more harmonies. Simpler the better. So it works.
A horrible choice of words, but it sounds real.
No, thank you. Yeah.
Sound like it.
I appreciate that.
It sounds,
yeah. Thank you.
It sounds real. The last thing you hear is fuck off. And then a guitar feedback rings out for a second and the song ends with a drum fill. And there it is. Your first foray into the world with many eyes, revelation, and thanks for sitting in again, man.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to me, man. This has been great. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, no problem. And before we break, I know that you're opening Thursday's War All the Time 20th anniversary tour in 2024 alongside my old pal Walter in Rival Schools. That's going to be awesome.
I can't wait to watch those guys every night. I love Rival Schools. I love
Do you
Thursday.
Know when that starts? What roughly,
January
what
29th. It's the first show's in Buffalo, New York, a town ballroom.
Oh, so a couple days.
Yep.
Fantastic. And I wonder if you're going to see any of those beggars and hangers on since you're going to be in Buffalo.
We'll see.
I don't know if they're going to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, we'll see.
You can tell them, fuck off. I'm in love.
I'll just sell them a t-shirt.
Stand outside with a sign that says that. Listen, man, again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, man.
Everything happens, everything must. Everything happens, everything must.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed Keith Buckley's return to Krista Makes a Podcast, but don't go anywhere. We got the band you might not know and the rap segment coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA Podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Hated, a new deathcore band from Denver, Colorado. I recently had the pleasure of working with guitarist Colton Crone while recording some new Less Than Jake songs out at the Blasting Room in Fort Collins, Colorado. Colton is one of the engineers, producers out there, and he is awesome. Hated is rounded out by Jordan Taylor on vocals, Greg Keenan on bass, and Mike Nolan on the drums. Here's a snippet of their current single, Never Better.
Let me enter all your sorrows. No reason.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Man, Keith is always such an awesome guest because he's willing to open up about the lyrics, which sometimes we have guests on here, Chris, that don't do that as much. And there's nothing wrong at all with wanting to keep certain things to yourself. And I don't fault anyone for that. But it's so cool to be able to hear someone's lyrical thought process and emotions that go into those lyrics.
And sometimes when a guest says, I don't really know, these are just words that came flying out of me, I believe them too. They don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes you do. There's also got to be, I don't know if we've ever had a guest on here, but certainly I've heard, like, you know, artists say, well, you know, whatever the song means to you, like, they're not going to tell you what it's about. That's personal for them. And he really opened up today.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And yeah, like I said, if he didn't want to, if there's certain things he didn't want to say, I don't think you pushed him too hard. But I think it's fascinating to hear exactly what a song is about. And, you know, I loved last time Keith was on, hearing, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on between both these songs he's been on the show for. One thing I really liked that he said is he said, what's the easiest way to say the most? He was saying it in reference to the fuck off, I'm in love lyric.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool way to look at it, because you reference this all the time on the show, especially if it's someone from the world of punk rock, that person in the crowd with their fist in the air singing along. Well, if it's some complicated lyric with some weird melodic scheme, it's a little hard to sing along. But if it's something that's memorable and easy to sing along to, that's pretty effective as a lyric.
Yeah, I mean, you go all the way back in time to the first crooners or the first pop guys, you know. To the best example, I think, is children's nursery rhymes. You know, Mary Had a Little Lamb. It's just catchy repetitiveness. And, you know, I think Keith was trying to straddle the line with this track. Yes, it does undoubtedly sound like his past. It sounds like him. It's honest. But there's also some left turns, the chorus in particular in this song, and what the brothers Nick and Charlie Belmore have provided for Keith is a template for him to write over again. I find that fascinating, Chris, that here's 3.5-4 minutes of a blank canvas, and now you put words over it. That's, you know, that's pretty cool.
It is. That is really cool. It's really good way to put it too. It is like a painter with a canvas. Here is your canvas. What are you going to put on it? I think that's awesome. You know, also when it's your first song for a new project, and I know I've experienced this a few times with a few bands I play in, the first song that you write and you record, that's a pretty exciting thing, and it sets the tone for the rest of the entire project. And you know, Keith did say that with Many Eyes that their influences were a little bit more the grunge type of stuff, but this does kind of bridge where he came from. If they're going to go further in some other direction that isn't this, that's cool. But I think, you know, I would find it surprising if someone that's into the music of Keith Buckley doesn't like this.
Yeah, me too. It's not too far left of center. And in fact, when he mentioned the grunge thing, I don't hear that in here at all. I mean, the closest you would get is maybe the choruses, but I think it's cool. I'd love to hear some Nirvana pumpkin sounding stuff from this band. I think it'd be cool to see their interpretation of that. But yeah, this track is kind of still in Keith's wheelhouse.
Yeah, I love that it has choruses too. I like some heavy music, but I need a chorus. You know, sometimes that's my, what keeps me from liking hardcore music a lot or certain metal that doesn't have choruses. I need that chorus. I really like this chorus in this song.
I do too, and I don't think they overdid it. I don't think it's too sugary, saccharine-y, you know, sweet. It's got the right amount of harmony texture to it, and it works great with the rest of the song. It's not, as Keith said, he threw out the Warped Tour bands, but yes, the super screamy verses with the melodic choruses. It's like, you know, that works on one level, but, you know, can you pull it off and execute it to where it still sounds like the same song? And I think this one does.
I also wanted to ask you, as a guitarist, is there anything you can't do with pedals nowadays? My friend Josh Fiedler, he plays in Juliana Theory, and I play with him in a band called Pack. He's like a pedal genius. The sounds that he gets out of his pedals are just insane. I don't know how he does it. And I think that's pretty interesting that you thought those were synths in there, but they're actually just pedals.
I mean, yeah, that's a whole other education that I've never really went down yet.
It's an art.
It is an art. I said education. It really is an art. You hit the nail on the head. It's the blending of pedals. Hey, let's take this flanger and let's run it with this and run it with that. And there's guys that do it well. And yeah, I thought there were synths in this song. I think it's really cool that it's running throughout. I think it's odd that it makes the band feel bigger, where I would think it'd be a distraction with certain songs, and it works flawlessly here.
Is there a harder word to say than synths?
Synth, like, I thought you were gonna say flawlessly.
No, flawlessly I could say. Synths is so hard to say.
Hey Chris.
What's that?
I think this is a great time. I have no segue today. I just want to talk about our supporting cast just because I don't want to talk about it.
Sure.
I just like to talk about
it. Let's do it.
For the price of a cup of coffee, you could support the podcast you know and love. Go to chrisdemakes.com. It's our supporting cast, which is basically our Patreon. And you can get bonus episodes every week of Chris and I. It's called The After Party. We will talk with you. We will talk at you. We will talk at each other. We have a good time. Head over to chrisdemakes.com. If you haven't already, join our Facebook group, the Chris DeMakes a Podcast Facebook group. Over 5,000 active members. Chris does an amazing job keeping that page up. Tons of stuff in there. We also got an Instagram page now that we started so Chris can throw up actual video clips from these recordings that we do. We don't show all the video, but Chris puts those up there. And give Chris a follow on Instagram at Chris Fafalius, and I'm at Less Than Chris D. And I'm going to keep hitting you with stuff. We have a YouTube channel too. Chris DeMakes Official, head over there. Lots of great stuff. And Chris is also cool too. He has bands. He plays in Punchline. He plays in another Cheetah. He has an Etsy shop. He has cats. You got it all.
Hey, I got to say that when this episode is coming out, if you are in the Northeast, Punchline is actually doing a little short tour with Hot Rod Circuit, where we are playing our album Action from front to back, and they are playing their album If It's Cool With You, It's Cool With Me in its entirety. And I don't know, we're recording this a few weeks before these shows. I'm hoping there's not still tickets available, but in the event there might be some tickets, hey, come on out. If you're in Connecticut or Massachusetts or New York City or Philly, come out and see us. Yeah, I had to plug that, Chris.
Absolutely. And hey, another great episode, Chris. You know what? Every episode is great. Every episode's different. I absolutely love it. Want to thank this week's guest, Keith Buckley from Many Eyes. And we'll see you next week.
Hey, everybody. Satan here. I know what you're thinking. Jesus Christ, Satan has a podcast now, too? No, that's not it. But I am here to tell you about a podcast. And it's one that's all about my favorite band, Punchline. Not the band you expected me to say, right? You probably figured I'd like Slayer, or maybe some backwards Beatles records or something. Those are okay. But you usually find me rocking out to fan favorite Punchline albums like Action or Lion while I'm torturing dead people for all of eternity. Punchline's podcast is called A Band Called Punchline, and it's super entertaining to listen to this documentary-style look back at the 25 years of my favorite band. Honestly, I'm really feeling like I'm getting to know these guys, and their story is amazing. I'm so ready for them to get down here. I have so many questions. I gotta give them credit for catching on to my whole 37 thing, too. There's a reason why they're my favorite band, and if you listen to their podcast, they might become yours, too. A Band Called Punchline is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out, and I'll see you all in hell.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.